Today I chatted with Andrew, who is a dad with ISTP preferences on the Myers-Briggs personality type model, and I ask him all about what it's like to be a parent who leads with the introverted thinking function, which I call precise thinking. Hi, I'm Sandra.
And I'm Em.
And this is Family Personalities, the podcast that helps you create a more peaceful and compassionate family dynamic using personality type. So when I don't have a personal or professional connection with someone of a certain personality type, I reach out to my network for help. And today's guest, Andrew, came to me in this way. If you listened to the ISFJ-INFJ episode with Dan and Caitlin, Andrew is a longtime friend of Dan's. And this is actually the second parent guest that Dan has sent my way. If you recall Mark, our ISTJ parent from several episodes ago, Mark was actually a buddy of Dan's also. So I just wanted to say a special thank you to Dan for helping me find such excellent guests for the show. I really appreciate it. So Andrew, today's guest, he hails from Adelaide, Australia, and he's got two young kiddos, and he works in financial consulting. He has ISTP preferences in the Myers-Briggs, and I brought him on today as an example of a parent who leads with the introverted thinking function in Myers-Briggs, which I call precise thinking. Now, if you don't know what a cognitive function is in Myers-Briggs, I highly, highly recommend that you go back and listen to episode 39, where we give our intro to this concept. Or check out the cognitive function overview on my website at familypersonalities.com/functions. And don't forget that you can find all the basics of Myers-Briggs at familypersonalities.com/basics. Before we get into the conversation with Andrew, let me go over the two main functions that ISTPs use. So the first one is that introverted thinking function, which I call precise thinking. And it's about using frameworks and inner systems of objective logic to decide in a precise way. And you can go back one episode to hear all about this function in episode 79. And this is the function that we're focusing on in today's episode. So we're going to talk about this function heavily today. And in this episode, Andrew actually brings up his second function a lot, although we are not really focusing on it. And he doesn't mention it by name. But when you hear him talk about his very practical nature, what he's referring to is the second function that ISTPs use, which is extroverted sensing, which I call responsive sensing. And this is all about attuning to the present moment, taking in information with one's five senses in order to respond with immediate practical action. And though we don't get into it or call it by name in today's episode, if you want to go back and hear more about that function, you can listen to episode 57. It's a very practical function that likes to respond and take action in this moment. And you can hear in this episode how his precise thinking sort of works in service with his practical responsive sensing. So definitely stay tuned after my interview with him for my thoughts on the conversation. I'm not always great at processing things in real time, especially right now. My brain is so fuzzy with all of the health issues that I'm dealing with right now, and it's working even more slowly than usual. But there were some really incredible gems and insights in this conversation. Andrew has some great clarifications to precise thinking and to my definitions and facets of it that I couldn't quite process and articulate in the moment during our conversation. And so I was able to process them afterwards, and I called them out for you guys at the end of the interview to add a little extra insight to precise thinking. So stay tuned afterward for those. All right, let's get into it. Well, Andrew, thanks for joining me on the podcast. I like having people that I don't know on the podcast because it's fun to kind of get to know someone new and learn about you as we go. First, I would love to know kind of, could you give us a picture of what your family looks like?
Yeah, sure. So I'm married and I have two boys. I've got a four-year-old and a six-year-old.
Okay. And first, what's your Myers-Briggs type?
I'm an ISTP.
And do you know your Enneagram type?
No, I don't. No. I've looked into that a little bit before because I've got some friends which are into that, but I haven't done a proper test, and I've looked through the different types, and it's not obvious to me which I most align with.
Yeah. Do you know your wife's Myers-Briggs type?
She hasn't done an actual test, but I'm very confident she's an ISTJ.
Oh, okay. So ISTJ, ISTP. That's interesting.
Yeah.
Okay. And do you happen to know, I know your kids are young and most people don't know their kids' types. Would you happen to have any guesses as to your kids' types?
No. I don't think so. I think they're both thinking types.
Mm.
We do joke about my oldest son being just a mirror image of my wife. So perhaps he's an ISTJ. But I think he's probably a bit extroverted. So yeah, not sure.
Okay. That's funny. My older son is a mirror image of my husband too. Do you think your younger son might be a mirror image of you, or did you not get one?
I don't think so. He's a bit more disagreeable than I am. So he's sort of seems to be out on his own at the moment, it seems.
Okay, interesting. And what do you do for work?
I'm a director with a small financial analysis and consulting business. So I specialize in financial modeling and financial analysis and business intelligence tools. So my background is essentially accounting, and I've sort of moved into more, I guess, niche and specialist sort of finance accounting land.
Okay. Is it kind of like financial projecting or?
Yeah, that's part of it. Yeah. Okay. Forecasting and planning and budgeting.
Do you feel like that fits in well with your personality type?
I think I'm not someone who looks forward. I'm not someone who likes planning, to be honest. I think it fits my personality type because it's really building models is really a big problem solving activity. And so I enjoy that part of it. I typically leave it to others to come up with the assumptions about what's going to happen in future. I've been criticized for not being a forward planner. So, yeah.
Okay. I feel that like that tracks a little bit. And, okay. Interesting. I have more questions about that, but I guess that doesn't really fit in with the interview. So I'll leave it be for now. Well, I wanted to get into first talk about the function that ISTPs lead with in Myers-Briggs, which is called introverted thinking and which I call precise thinking.
Mm-hmm.
And a little bit about what that might look like in your parenting. So kind of one of the first things I talk about with people who use precise thinking is that they value objective, independent thinking. Their logic tends to go against the grain. It doesn't need to find consensus with others. So does that resonate with you? And does it show up in your parenting?
Yeah. I think that does resonate with me. I don't see myself, I guess, as someone who goes against the grain as a matter of course, but I feel that I could probably be seen that way because I suppose people's opinion of me isn't something that's particularly important to me. So I'll go down a path that I think is the right path regardless of what the crowd's doing around me. So I guess that could be seen as being going against the grain, but it's certainly not a... It's not in a rebellious manner. It's more in a practical manner. I think ISTPs are probably the ultimate pragmatists. It's about doing what makes sense and what's right and what's pragmatic essentially. I think is how I see it. In terms of my parenting, I think I probably parent by trial and error a lot. So I use my own internal thinking and processing to work out what's going to be the best approach to a situation with my kids. And so I'm not the sort that would pick up a book on parenting and read that. that sort of thing just really sounds quite awful to me. I know my wife's tried to give me some parenting books to read in the past, but just not interesting to me. And I think that's probably because I've observed enough parents around me and children around me to see that you can take the same approach to parenting to different children and you can get completely different outcomes. And so I think for that reason, I don't typically like to give advice on parenting, and I don't typically like to receive too much advice on parenting, because to me it's, someone's experience with their child could be, it's absolutely irrelevant to my children and vice versa. So
you feel like it's not one size fits all.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. And I think most people would agree with that. And there's no doubt still value in books and materials and that, but it's certainly not something that I go to.
Yeah, I think that's interesting because you and your wife, you know, I don't know if you're familiar with that you guys both use a different sort of thinking. Though you both have a preference for thinking in Myers-Briggs, she uses extroverted thinking where you use introverted thinking. Mm-hmm. And so for her, she prefers those more like standardized methods of thinking established ways of doing things. Whereas for you, it's more like the independent ways of thinking and more like personalized methods.
Yeah, yeah. And so probably I think that probably it means we complement each other quite well. And it probably gives me a little bit of freedom to not worry about those things, because I know that my wife worries about those things. so yeah, perhaps if she wasn't the way she was, it would be more practical and pragmatic for me to look at me at more resources that are available. But I guess I feel that she's got that covered.
She's got that covered. I like that you're able to recognize that. The other thing that I like to talk about with precise thinking is that people who use this function, they want clarity and precision. They value the truth. So they notice inconsistencies and they want to correct those mistakes. Does this resonate with you, and does it show up in your parenting?
Yeah, I sort of struggled when I saw this question initially, because I feel like I am comfortable with ambiguity, but thinking about it further, I think that's probably because ambiguity can present a challenge, I enjoy a challenge. So I enjoy bringing clarity to ambiguity and getting into a situation, and it might be an ambiguous situation, but I think I do this as part of my work, coming into a situation, a client will ask me to come in and they've got this problem and they're not quite sure how to fix it, and there's a lot of moving parts, and so I'm good at coming in and saying, okay, well, you need to worry about this and this and this, and then we bring it together and provide them a solution. So I think that probably does resonate with me. And in terms of my parenting, I think I probably want and probably expect my boys to have a I guess an understanding of what they're doing and why they're doing it. And so I think I'll probably, if they've done something wrong, I'll sort of seek to get them to understand what they've done wrong and why they might have done it wrong. And I'm probably a little bit inflexible with that, I think, because often little kids don't know what their motivations are and why they've done something. And quite often they'll say, I don't know. And so I think I find that a frustrating answer sometimes, because I think, well, you should know. Because I think for me, my motivations, I think they're not at all unambiguous to myself. So I've got a good understanding of why I do things. So I probably expect that of others as well. I think I probably get the same issue with my wife at times.
Mm. Yeah, that kids often don't, they don't know why they do the things they do.
Yeah, yeah.
What is it in you, and if it's okay if you don't know how to answer this, what is it in you that you think gives you the clarity of understanding why you know why you're doing what you're doing?
I think I'm just good at breaking down a situation or a way of thinking into its most basic parts. So I can follow it all the way down the tree, if that makes sense, to where it started.
Mm.
And so I think I get some clarity from that. And I think being able to disconnect emotionally from thinking and sort of almost disregard that, allows more objective thinking. And I think I'm not afraid to be self-critical and identify. I don't have a problem with identifying my weaknesses and seeing a flaw that I might have. So I can sort of see, okay, well, there's some bias here. You know, maybe it'll remain a bias, but at least I know it's there. Maybe I can change. So I think it's, I think that's what it is, just breaking. And when it comes to, because I really like problem solving, so it's breaking down things to its smallest part and then starting from there. So I think I probably do that internally.
Mm. Do you think you can talk your kids through that process for them, like helping them break down their own understanding of why they do the things they do?
Yeah, possibly. I can't say it's something I've done. Perhaps when they get older, that might be something that they'll be more receptive to. I could probably achieve something like that with my 6-year-old, my 4-year-old, not so much.
I guess it's hard to see in another person's brain though, too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. It's an interesting thought.
It takes an assumption.
Yeah. Yeah. It's something I could think about. I mean, I certainly like, I probably do it with them at a practical level rather than an emotional level, which is probably not surprising. Yeah. I try and encourage them to work through how to solve a practical problem. So I try not to give them the answers. I'll help them through it and guide them through it in a real, like a literally a hands-on, solving a problem, you know, needing to build something out of Lego doing something outside. Yeah. But, turning that on to an emotional side. Yes. It's nothing I've ever thought of.
Yeah. It's funny because when you've initially, you know, we're saying the motivation behind doing something, it's, you know, initially I always like think of like when I have something with my kids and my first thing is to go to the emotions, right? But I'm a very different type from you. And so my first thing is to like go to the, oh, you were feeling this way and that's why you reacted like this. And that's, you know, the first place I go to instead of, you know, removing the emotion as I go to the emotion.
Yeah.
So definitely a very different initial reaction and breaking down the motivation. So then the other thing that I talk about with precise thinking is that people who use this function have a lot of frameworks, theories, or principles that they use to make sense of the world or to problem solve. Is this something that resonates with you? And does that show up in specifically in your parenting? I'm curious.
Yeah, it does. Yeah. I've been told before that I'm creative, but I think ISTPs are really just really good at synthesizing. So when I solve a problem, I don't think there's too much creativity involved. It's more just it's feeding off that vast sort of toolkit of all of the problems that I've solved in the past and being able to grab maybe an unconventional tool to solve a problem. But essentially it's based on past experience and then just grabbing that and using it and, you know, learning new skills along the way as well, of course.
But when you say past experience, is it like solving it in the same way though, or using, but doing it in a different way?
Yeah. Not necessarily in the same way. So I guess it's being able to, it's coming across a problem that I've never seen before and being able to solve that problem by synthesizing tools that I've built up in whatever framework or toolkit it is that I've got to apply it to the situation. And I think that sort of ties into the trial and error a bit. I'm not always good at getting it right the first time, but I'll get it right eventually. And I think in terms of parenting, I think it's that ties in a bit to being a bit of trial and error in terms of just seeing what works. But then at the same time, I think it's also, if it's not broke, then don't fix it sort of approach to parenting. So I think probably I'm probably not the most proactive with parenting. If things are going well, I don't see any reason to sort of change too much or introduce anything new. Whereas if something's not going quite right, that's sort of more when I sort of tend to get involved. So yeah, I think going back to what my wife's strengths are, she's a bit better at bringing in things. She'll sort of identify that the kids have reached a developmental milestone and it's time to introduce this thing to them so that they do that. And that's not something that I'm particularly good at. Because I think I probably rely more on what I have experienced in the past or what I've observed. And if you've never done parenting before, and everyone who's a parent has at some point has never done parenting before, it's not something that, I may not have that personal experience with it. So I'm probably not good at going out to find what those things might be. That sounds really abstract. So I don't know if that makes sense.
No, I think I get what you're saying. Does your wife do work outside the home?
Yes, she's a school teacher.
A school teacher. Okay. Interesting. I wonder how much of that is to just her knowing, like, since she studied in school teaching too, that she knows maybe a bit about, childhood education and, developmental milestones and stuff like that too.
Yeah. I think that'd have to be right. Yeah. She teaches high school, so she's not focused on younger kids. But yeah, you still pick things up. She definitely reads a lot more about those sorts of things than I do. So I'm not sure if I quite answered the question.
I wonder if you have any examples when you might have brought like a specific framework, theory, or principle into your parenting to solve a problem. I don't even know if like would you be conscious of it when you do this?
No, I don't think so. No, I don't think I would be.
It's more of an unconscious just thing that you're doing while you're problem solving and tackling kind of everyday issues.
Yeah. It's an interesting thought. I think it is quite unconscious.
Thondra, I just heard Bill Burr's rant saying how women should be supporting female athletes and not Real Housewives who just yell at each other.
That's ridiculous. Real Housewives is a sport. Join us on From the Bleachers, where we analyze the strategy and gameplay that our favorite reality stars use to earn additional seasons of play and social media fame.
And if you're lucky, Sandra will pull out her apology play rubric so you can all see what an easy grader I am.
I'm sorry, Mandy, but if you think Monica's apology to Heather on Salt Lake City deserved anything over a 2.5, you're delusional.
Whether we're breaking down confrontation play, relishing the bravo, bravo, bravo moments, or awarding a tardy for the party, we are the only place you'll find in-depth analysis of the plays that your favorite housewives are making on our screens.
From the Bleachers, a Real Housewives game analysis is available everywhere podcasts live. So then another thing is that people who use precise thinking, they can detach from both their sensory and their emotional world in order to do very deep and complex thinking, which can make them seem as if they're not listening and affect their ability to be in touch with their own or others' emotions. Is this something that resonates with you?
Yeah, and it does. It does.
And does it show up in your parenting?
Yeah, it does. My wife's always criticizing me for not listening. So that's a challenge of mine. I guess if I'm focused on something, I completely tune out to what's going on around me. So yeah, I will miss things that my wife or my boys are saying to me. So yes, that's definitely fair. Yeah. In terms of, detaching emotionally, I think that's a good way to look at it, is detaching emotionally, because I think I do have quite strong and deep emotions. They just sit below the surface, and I think I am very good at being able to detach those when I'm making a decision and working through something. And Yeah, so a probably a good example of that is in my parenting is well, I mean, I'd say we're probably strict is the wrong word, but discipline's important to us. Mm-hmm. And so I can quite unemotionally discipline the boys, whereas my wife will feel bad, I suppose, mm-hmm. whereas I don't feel bad, I guess, because I see the utility in the discipline. So that kind of trumps any kind of emotion. I think ISTPs can get a bit of a bad rap for sort of not being emotional and not considering emotions, because I think we do consider emotions. I think they're just another data point in a decision. And I think, and we would argue that that we just put a better weight on that emotion than other people might do. So I do factor in emotional issues into situations, but I just give it less weight perhaps than other people might do.
Gotcha.
And in terms of a good example in parenting, if one of the boys clearly does something wrong, like they hit one of their, say if one of the boys hits his brother and we see it, we can see it's clearly wrong. And I've seen this before with my oldest son. He'll hit his little brother. And so we'll sort of jump on him really quickly and, you know, he'll get in trouble and he'll be told off and he'll be sent to his room or whatever it might be. And sometimes he has a really emotional reaction to that and he's really upset, and you could really sense in his emotions a real sense of injustice.
Mm.
And it's then that I can pick up that, okay, he doesn't feel like he's done something wrong here, even though he's obviously done something wrong. So there's obviously more going on here. And when you sort of get down to it, what's happened is his little brother's just been slowly poking away at him or teasing him or something like that. So he's been the aggressor. And he's really started it. And so, you know, whether he deserved to get thumped or not, you know, that's up for debate. But, so I think in that situation, I'll probably factor in emotion a bit more. And at that point, I'll sort of see, well, even though he did the wrong thing, I can understand from his perspective that, there was an injustice there. And so I'll probably soften a little bit at that point. And I'll say, okay, I can see that, that your little brother brought you to this point. And so then I'll make sure that I let his little brother know as well that, you know, what he, you know, he shouldn't have been hit, but, you know, he shouldn't have been doing what he was doing. So I think that's where emotion is, it's still valuable, and I'll still, take it into account, and to varying degrees, depending on the situation.
Gotcha.
But generally speaking, I'd say, yeah, I'm good at detaching emotion from a situation. So if, I've had my wife be emotional before about a particular issue, and there's probably an advantage to being able to sort of push past the emotional side and try and get to the issue. But then also that can be a weakness sometimes too, where she doesn't necessarily want the problem solved. She just wants the emotion to be recognized. So yeah, that's something that I recognize and try and work to be better at those situations.
Yeah. I like how you worded it, that for you the emotion is there, but it's a data point.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a bit mechanical and impersonal, but I think that's how I think.
Yeah. When you do try to get in touch with your emotion, with your emotions, what does that look for you? How would you try to do that?
I think probably through music and through films.
Mm.
It's funny. Probably some of the most emotional moments for me is watching films about achievement and even problem solving. So watching films about one of the most emotional films I've watched for a while was the Apollo 11 documentary. I'm not sure if you've seen it. It's
I don't think so.
it's there's no narrative. It's just a whole compilation of archival footage, and it just tells the story in how it was told at the time. And it seems quite ironic that go to quite an unemotional thing to generate that emotion, because it connects my love and enjoyment in problem solving to a much greater achievement, I suppose.
Yeah.
In terms of going to the moon. So,
oh, yes, I love that so much.
Film's good for me. I really like, music, different pieces of music from different times, depending on the time.
That's neat. Well, is there anything else that you've learned about yourself as an ISTP and a parent that you want to mention before we kind of get into more of the general parent questions?
I think being a quite a practical person, I think, and wanting to do things and fix things, I probably found it challenging is maybe not the best word, perhaps somewhere between sort of unsatisfying and boring when the kids were quite young, because they weren't particularly, young kids can't do anything, really young kids, they can't do anything. So I couldn't really do too much with them. They just seemed to be, they just seemed to be a bit more of a burden, I suppose.
Mm.
So I think probably in the first couple years or so of when we had our first son, I probably had more feelings of, more often I would have had feelings of, why do we do this? Especially when it's in the middle of the night, you're getting up. But certainly as they've gotten older, that's changed a lot. And now that they're a lot more interactive and I can see them, I can do things with them and I can see them doing things for themselves and, seeing them being able to solve a problem, with no involvement is really satisfying as a parent. So I'm really enjoying this. They're getting older and getting more, more interactive and more proactive with wanting to do things for themselves. And I think that's something which I'm really enjoying and seeing that develop. And no doubt that's just going to develop a lot more as they get older. So they're still, relatively young.
Yeah.
As a weakness of an ISTP, I think not being really a fan of structure, I think is a real weakness of an ISTP as a parent, because I think children really do need, in my view, I think children really do need structure. And I can really see the value that my wife's brought in bringing that structure. So I'm really thankful for her that she's got that side covered.
I often find myself wishing I had an ISTJ in the house. Yeah. We don't have that structure in our house.
it's frustrating for me at times, for sure. When I don't want the structure there and I don't want to be told what to do and when we're doing it, that frustrates me. But she understands that as well, that I don't like that. So we've got a pretty good system. But certainly for the boys, she's just really good at organizing their weeks and checklists and things like that. So, I do use them because I can see there's a lot of value in those. So As I said earlier, I think my wife's skills allow me to settle into my weaknesses a bit more, for better or worse. So I probably am happy to be less structured, and because I know that she's got that covered, and I try and bring that to the boys as well. So try and introduce a bit of ambiguity to them, and
allows you to be yourself a bit more too. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I have a list of questions that I like to ask all our parent guests just to see the different ways in which different personality types answer. The first one is, why did you want to be a parent? If you did want to be a parent.
Indifference probably a strong word, but I think in a lot of ways I was pretty indifferent to becoming a parent initially. It was something that my wife wanted and it's sort of something that everyone else does. So I was like, okay, well, yeah, let's do it. That's definitely changed over time. It's definitely one of the best things I've ever done, for sure. Absolutely.
And what's the hardest What's been the hardest thing about parenting for you? I know you mentioned the tough pieces in the beginning about just that they, you know, there wasn't anything practical you could do with them. But
I think the main thing for me is I really value time to myself where I can just zone out and do my own thing. And I find that really difficult as a parent to get that time. My work is, you know, so I'm busy all day at work, and then I come home and it's straight into the dinner routine and then the bath routine. And then, and on the weekends, it's tricky, to get that time to myself. But some weekends I just have to take it. So I might just sit on the computer, and I'll get up on a Saturday morning and I'll just sit on the computer and just play a game for half the day. And my wife's pretty good at identifying that, you know, that's what I'm doing and I'm going to do it. that's something, a bit of a struggle for me, getting that time to myself and not having to interact.
Yeah, I can definitely identify there. I think a lot of introverts can feel you there.
Yeah.
What's been the most rewarding?
I think it's seeing them. It's seeing the boys just getting more intelligent and smarter and being able to solve problems, and you just seeing that growth, and you know, something that they couldn't have achieved even a week ago, you know, the week after they've got it. Like my eldest son is in second year at school. We have our reception year, then we have year one. So he's in the second year, which is year one, and he hasn't been able to tie his shoelaces all for his first year. And I kept saying, you got to learn to tie your shoelaces. This is, you know, you've got to be able to tie your shoelaces. So one weekend I just sort of sat him down and said, this is how you do it. This is how you do it. And, you know, got a bit frustrated with him at times, but we got there. And then he just spent the rest of the day just practicing his shoelaces. And, and he really got right into it. I sort of felt it was going to be something we're going to have to keep pushing him, but now he's excited and he would just go around untying his shoelaces so that he can tie his shoelaces off.
Well, I need to fly you out to California, or I need to fly you out to Oregon Stat to teach my 9-year-old who still can't tie his shoelaces. Can we get you out here?
Sure. So yeah, that's satisfying seeing them grow and develop and be able to do new things.
And what do you hope that your kids will remember the most about you or their childhood?
I think it's really around, I want them to be able to look back and remember all the times that we spent together where they learned something. So I think I want them to look back and see it, all the things that they've learned and all the skills that they've developed. And, you know, dad taught me how to do this, or dad taught me how to do that. And I think that's probably something I see looking back on my parents, sort of thinking of the things that they taught me when I was younger and those skills. So I think essentially what it comes down to, you know, I want my kids to feel like, you know, I equipped them to go out into the world, and that I did that well.
And when you think of like the things that you want them to remember having learned, it's more of those practical things.
Yeah, definitely more practical.
Yeah, interesting. You know, you mentioned, you know, getting alone time is difficult. Being a parent in general is just difficult and it's stressful. One thing you mentioned that you do is, you know, just go on your computer and play a game for a day. Is there anything else that you do for self-care or to get that time that you need?
Yeah, I don't do it enough, but I quite enjoy mindfulness practice.
Mm.
So that's something that I get a lot of benefit out of. So I try and do that daily if I can. I like reading, and I like listening to podcasts and things like that. It's just about anything that allows me to zone out and to be in, you know, I guess a somewhat a state of isolation or solitude.
And if you could paint me a picture, if you could paint like an ideal day with your family, what would that look like?
Probably going outside and doing some doing some exploration out in a park or a reserve or something like that, and just sort of just exploring things with the boys and seeing things for the first time, and understanding how things come together and in a natural way. Probably going outside, getting some air, getting into nature a little bit. And even saying that, it makes me realize that we don't do that enough. So,
That sounds really nice, Sam. It was really nice getting to know you and getting a little more color around at least one example of an ISTP parent. So thanks for sharing everything.
Yeah, no problem. I don't know how representative I am. It's hard to know. There's obviously a lot of variation even within a type. So,
Sure. Yeah.
Thank you to Andrew for taking the time to give a little bit of insight into his ISTP parenting world. I'm curious what you thought about this conversation, and did parts of it resonate with you? I would love to hear from you at familypersonalitiespod@gmail.com. One thing that stood out to me, especially since I've had both conversations with Andrew, as well as with our INTP guest that you guys haven't heard yet, that will be next episode, is that both of them talked about trial and error being a central and comfortable part of the way that they approach their parenting. This might have stood out to me because it's so uncomfortable to me, because I like to get things right the first time. I like to prepare and read and like, how exactly should I approach this thing and make sure that I really get it right out of the gate. And so to hear them say their comfort with it, kind of struck me. And it's not something that Em and I mentioned in our discussion of precise thinking, that we talked about problem solving and how they attack problems. But we didn't specifically call out that's how they attack problems, was this kind of like trial and error thing. And so because both Andrew and Christian, our INTP guest that you guys haven't heard yet, because both of them talked about this trial and error way that they approach their parenting, I wanted to make sure that I called that out, because it does sound like that is a central way of precise thinking to solving problems. Another thing that stood out to me was Andrew's discussion about the second facet of precise thinking, which I described as people who using this function wanting clarity and precision. They value the truth. They notice inconsistencies and want to correct those mistakes. And he was saying at first he didn't quite resonate with what I had written. I sent him the questions beforehand, and he said at first he didn't resonate with it. He was saying at first he didn't resonate with it because he feels like he's very uncomfortable with ambiguity. But upon further thought, he realized he does resonate because he enjoys the process of bringing things into clarity and finding that precision. I thought this was a really great distinction on his part, because I think there are some Myers-Briggs types who might be the opposite, who are really uncomfortable in a situation where there are mistakes or ambiguity and are very uncomfortable until they're fixed. And I thought that this facet that I explained might be misunderstood in this way. And so his clarification that this is actually a very comfortable place for him to be, this state of ambiguity, I thought this was very helpful, that it's energizing to be in a place where these things are unclear or wrong, and that this process of bringing clarity, of solving the problem, is energizing. That there's a comfort level with the messiness of mistakes and ambiguity. I thought that was so important to bring to light here. So it's not about, oh my gosh, this is wrong, I have to fix it right now. It's more like this. And I can sense this in other people that I know who lead with precise thinking, that they do seem like energized and comfortable in this space, of almost like, confusion and ambiguity and messiness isn't quite the right word for it. I'm sure that people who use introverted thinking would have much better words for it than I would. This state of ambiguity is just such a great word for it. And because they like being able to to get to a point of clarity, but that process of getting to it is what's exciting. And you have to be able to live in a state of ambiguity to be able to eventually get to the clarity. And I thought that that distinction was so important to bring to that facet. And so I definitely want to kind of reword that to bring that clarity. I also really like that Andrew clarified the difference between detaching emotionally and not having emotions. We've talked about this before in our thinking versus feeling episodes, but it bears repeating and reminding that thinking users don't have fewer emotions and feelings. As Andrew describes it, he has quite strong and deep emotions, but they sit below the surface, and he detaches from them in order to do his decision making. I think we would all do well to remember this about our thinking loved ones so that we don't trod over their feelings, assuming that they won't feel it. Lastly, though, we didn't focus on ISTP's second function of responsive sensing or extroverted sensing in this episode. You can hear it so much in how Andrew describes this aspect of himself. He really describes himself as a practical person and seems to value teaching his kids very practical skills like tying their shoelaces, which, as you heard, we necessarily haven't prioritized in our house. And he enjoys like the hands-on things with his kids, like, you know, building Legos, things like that. And this is very much in contrast to what you're going to hear next episode when I have Christian Rivera, our INTP guest on the podcast. Andrew's precise thinking seems very much in service to these practical problems that he wants to solve. Whereas, spoiler, Christian's precise thinking, our INTP guest, you'll see seems more in service to these intuitive and philosophical problems that he's trying to solve, which matches up with INTP's second function of imaginative intuition or extroverted intuition. And that segues me very nicely to let you know that you have to listen to the next episode with Christian Rivera. Subscribe to the podcast so that you don't miss it. He is the host of the popular podcast Dopamine, and it was such an incredible conversation. He paints such a beautiful picture of an INTP dad. He is an INTP who has done so much self-discovery and self-work, and he also uses personality type, both Myers-Briggs and Enneagram, in his parenting, and so he has just incredible examples of how to do that. And I was just like, I was in my element in this chat with him, easily one of my top five conversations I've had on the podcast. You really, really don't want to miss it. So I've recorded this episode, but I haven't edited it yet. I hopefully will get that out to you in the next week or two here, I hope. But you really are not going to want to miss that one, no matter what personality type you are. It's just a really great conversation about using personality type in the family. So rate, review, subscribe, share the podcast. You can email me at familypersonalitiespod@gmail.com. Follow me on Instagram and Facebook at familypersonalities. And I will catch you next time. That's it for our show this week. We would like to apologize to our children, our parents, our spouses,
and anyone else we may have lovingly thrown under the bus this episode.
Thank you for listening, and catch us next time on the Family Personalities Podcast.